Yes, hello everyone and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this summer I'll be bringing you all the news and interviews for everything to do with basketball in WA. You are listening or watching part two of this week's episode. Part one focused on Mitch Norton and Todd Blanchfield's departure from the Perth Wildcats and the life challenges they faced as a result of being dumped while still contracted. Our guest today knows all about life challenges. Scott Morrison thought moving to Perth from Canada after working in the NBA for the Boston Celtics would be a great experience on and off the court. Little did he know there would be border problems followed by significant family health issues, which forced him to resign and return home without a job to go to. But after 12 months in the NBA G League, he is back in the NBA at the Utah Jazz, and General Manager Justin Zanuck is thrilled to have him on board.
Scott's reputation as an excellent teacher, a great offensive mind, a hard worker, organized, did such a great job for us at the Salt Lake City Stars as the head coach last year for our G League team. So much so, Coach Hardy really became to trust him, and now he's going to be on the front of our bench.
Yes, on the front of the bench at the Utah Jazz, Scott Morrison. Welcome back to the Dribble Podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. Good to see you again, man.
So this time 2 years ago, you were preparing to chuck your family onto a multiple plane journey to come into Australia where you were going to have 14 days of hotel quarantine, and now you're back in the NBA as a big assistant at the Utah Jazz. You must be excited.
Yeah, I know. I'm definitely excited. Happy to get another chance at the NBA and have a little bit different outlook on life now than the last time. So long story short, I'm going to appreciate every moment and not take anything for granted and try to continue to work as hard as I can to stay at this level. But the trip to Perth was an interesting one at the time. It wasn't the easiest thing that we did, but we have no regrets, and we learned a lot about ourselves, and I learned a lot about myself that 3 week period just getting there, let alone the stuff that we went through during the season. So a lot of tough challenges we went through, but a lot of great memories too.
And it seems like the relationships over here are still really strong. I was in Queensland at the NBL Blitz in September, and I was in the same hotel as all the players and all the teams, and so many people came up to me and said, you need to do a story on Scott because he's back in the NBA and it's great what's happening for him. You posted on social media the other week about Jesse Wagstaff for his 450th. Your relationships are really strong still, aren't they?
Yeah, no, I've kept in touch with lots of the guys. Most of the players, some more than others, but most of the guys I've have on social media and will hit up every now and then, try to follow their lives. I know Todd's about to have a baby or his partner is anyway. And keep in touch with Mitch, Jesse, Bryce, hit up LT every now and then. Keep in real good contact with our staff. Mike and Trigg, obviously, in Southeast now, we talk all the time. Keegan, still in Perth, and Nixie in the NBL One. So consider those guys all friends. It's tough that you don't get to see your friends that often, probably, if ever again, maybe, in some cases. But that's the beauty of social media and the internet and things like that. We can keep in touch and still feel like you're not missing a beat. It did break my heart not to be able to go to Vegas to watch the Wildcats play the Ignite. Last month, we had like 3 days of it's called an organizational summit that our owner put on that we all had to be there for, and it fell right smack in the middle of that trip, so I had to watch on ESPN like everybody else. But other than that, it's been great to keep in touch with guys, and also have kind of built some stronger relationships since I've left with some of the other coaches. You know, like kept in good touch with Adam Ford and talked with Scott Roth quite a bit in the off season, and they were, you know, hitting me up to ask about players in the G League for possible imports. But it's good to know that we can, talk basketball. And if we ever meet up in Vegas or wherever else during summer league, we'll have a beer and at least we have the common bond of having been in the NBL.
So you went back to Canada with no job lined up, which must have been absolutely terrifying. How did you end up at Salt Lake in that G League position?
Well, it was kind of terrifying. We were more concerned with getting Max, our son, set up at the time. So that was probably more terrifying than not have a job. I figured I'd get something eventually. We were looking at places to possibly just move to and live, where we could get good health care and get him set up in a place where we knew he'd be taken well taken care of. Salt Lake City was actually one of the places on our short list just because Suzanne had become close with Renee Ingalls. just sharing the common bond of autism, and they connected through our mutual friend Aaron Baines, who's been in the news lately, I know. So we were looking at Salt Lake, and I was coaching with the Canadian U23 team. We had a tournament in Toronto. It was probably late June, and I had been hoping that Joe Mazzulla would get the Utah job, because Joe and I have been good friends for a long time, and figured he would take me along with him. He was a finalist. Will Hardy beat him out. I'd never met Will Hardy in my life. Matter of fact, Will was probably the guy that took my job in Boston. I remember when he was hired, I remember thinking, like, that's the end of me, I'm gone now, because we kind of had the same role. So wasn't my favorite guy just because of that, but he quickly became my favorite guy when he called. I remember getting a call, unknown number, and answered it, and it was him. And he just mentioned that Danny Ainge, who went from Boston to Utah to run the Jazz, and a couple of the other guys that went with Will from Boston had strongly recommended me for something. And all he had was the G League, but I was quite happy to jump at that and take the position. So I got lucky there. And the other thing is, unlike my previous run in the G League a few years ago, Will wanted to involve me in everything. So the first week I was in Salt Lake, I went to the Jazz Coaches Summit, and he was, you know, pushing me to talk and challenge people and voice my opinion, which I did because he wanted me to. And from then on, we kind of built a good relationship, and I would be around the Jazz as much as I could, because the G League is like an 8-minute drive from the NBA facility. And just kind of built up a trust with him and a good rapport. And he made some changes at the end of the year, and I was fortunate to be bumped up right to the top there. So it was a different road. We learned a lot, like I said, so I wouldn't trade it all, and ended up kind of in a better spot than we were in Boston. Maybe our team's not quite as good right now, but overall the situation is, it couldn't be better in terms of the NBA.
And you had a really good season, 20-12, really good season in the G League, even though it's slightly different in what the expectations are, I would imagine, from a development point of view as well compared to NBL. But you mentioned that you're in touch with the NBL coaches. Well, you had Tyler Cook down there with you, and he's just torn it up here for a few weeks, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Tell us about that relationship.
Yeah, TC had a good year for us. He's what I consider maybe like a bubble NBA guy. And sometimes as you get older, the bubble tends to burst, but through no fault of your own, they just go looking for younger guys. So he may get another crack at the NBA. I hope he does. But if he doesn't, I'm sure he'll make lots of money overseas. It was great to have him go over to the NBL, especially playing for Mike and Trigg. So I was able to follow the games while he was there and see that he did pretty well. It's too bad he couldn't stick out the whole season. I know he was just an injury replacement, but at least he made a good impression while he was there. And hopefully he'll land on his feet with either something here back in the States or a lucrative Asia or Europe or wherever deal, because he's a good dude. He's extremely athletic, just a little bit maybe short for his position in the NBA.
So we heard from Justin Zanuck at the top of this podcast. He was generous enough to give me some of his time to talk about you when I was up in Queensland with him at the NBL Blitz. This is some of what he had to say during that interview that night.
We've known about Scott for quite a while. His reputation in the G League as a head coach, also being on the bench with Brad Stevens in Boston, you know, prior to him going to Australia. You know, he developed already a reputation. So when there was the opportunity arose for us to have him be with us, we jumped at it.
They jumped at it. Tell us about the franchise itself and the job and the role that you have within the organization.
Well, my role is pretty simple. We don't have so much as like titles on our job, but I guess I'm kind of the lead assistant for offense, which anybody that followed the NBL would be pretty shocked if I said defense. Hopefully not as shocked for offense. So I kind of lead that group. Coach has me lead most of the offensive drills in practice, which is great because you get to still kind of control things and keep that side of coaching sharp, as you would be if you're a head coach. And then in terms of games, just helping them with play calls and kind of planning for what we're going to do to attack the other team. And then if he decides to get tossed or ejected from a game, then I'll get to coach. So I'm going to try and poke him as much as I can to get on the referees and see if I can get at least one game out there. As far as the Jazz goes, I'm not just towing the company line here, but I think it's probably the best, if not best, top three organizations to work for in the NBA. And the reason I say that is because of our owner. We have a relatively new owner, Ryan Smith. He's pretty young as owners go. He's about my age. great people person, treats everyone well, and there's no such thing as a budget here. Everything that you need, you have. We went to Hawaii for training camp, for example, which was pretty cool. We got to bring our wives, and they had to have a week away doing their own things while we were working. And just little things like that. Every time there's a holiday or the kid's birthday, there's a package at the door. They don't miss a beat here. So it's really a high priority on families and treating people right. And from the basketball side, like I said, we still have a little bit ways to go for our roster, but it won't be because of him not putting in the time or the money, and it won't be because of our front office doing their great job. We just have to get lucky with a couple of players, and hopefully we'll be right back at the top. But as far as situations go, you can't get much better than this, NBA or otherwise.
So what are the expectations from a coaching perspective for the team this year? It's a difficult situation when you know you've got a lot of young guys in the group. How are you approaching it as a coaching collective?
Well, I think it's like one of those situations that's a blessing in disguise. Obviously, you want to be able to compete for a championship. I don't think anyone expects us this year to compete for a championship. They overachieved a little bit last season before they traded a lot of their vets at trading deadline. So we're even younger than last year. We're just going to approach it game by game, try to compete every game, but definitely have a little bit of a G League feel because development's going to maybe trump doing everything you can to win a game on a given night. Some of our guys that aren't used to shooting threes may be called upon to shoot a few threes just to get the experience. Maybe not our best ball handlers will get the chance to play ball screens and pick and rolls just to get that experience. But we're still going to try and win every game, but there'll be a little bit of an eye or a side percentage that goes to development as well. And that takes the pressure off us. But at the same time, you got to win a few games to keep things enjoyable. And I'm sure our guys will compete every night. In the NBA, if you just work as hard as you can every night, you're going to get a few wins just by that. So I think we have the kind of guys that will give it all they have every night, regardless of who we're playing or where we're at.
Vastly different competition in every way, the NBA compared to the NBL. 28 games over here. You'll have that many by Christmas. Bigger courts, amazing athletes, more money. Like, is it essentially a different sport?
No, I mean, every league's different. The NBL was more physical because of the amount of time between games, there was a lot more practice and scouting, so you really had to be on your toes to get ready for the next opponent. The league, everyone knows each other so well, great coaches in the league, so it was really challenging from a coach's point of view. The challenges here are maybe a little bit different. 82 games, how do you get the guys up every game? How do you keep them locked in and engaged? How do you keep them from getting injured? We didn't do that very well in Perth either when I was there, but it's a lot of that's luck too. The grind is tough sometimes, but at least you're treated the best. You get the best treatment for hotels and flights and food and everything like that. It doesn't stop you from being tired a lot, but that's kind of why we're doing it. Like I said at the start, having been in the NBA and kind of seen near the top of it and then being out altogether, taught me a lot. And, that's going to be the most you'll hear me complain all season. What I just said there, I'm going to be excited to be on every trip and I don't care when I get to sleep. I'll just be happy to get into that facility the next day and be able to be part of a great organization like this and just try to prove every day that I belong.
So you went through so much personally and professionally here. The NBA is such a massive industry, and now you're back in there. Has your perspective on the job and sport in general changed?
Yeah, I'd say it's changed quite a bit. Two ways it's changed for me. You hear a lot of people talk about their why, like why they do something. And my why's changed like 3 times now. It used to be I just wanted to prove that I was, could compete with the best. Then I wanted to try and prove that I could be a head coach. I became obsessed with that, and that was not a good look for me or a good process for me. The stuff with our family that happened, my why has now changed to basically being as successful as I can to try and support them and, save some money to be able to support Max if he needs it when I retire and things like that. So the reasons why I'm motivated have changed. The amount of work and desire hasn't changed. That's, for me, I feel like it's always been at a high level. But why I'm doing it has changed. And the other thing that's changed is, like I said, I was always obsessed with being a head coach when I was in Boston and kind of would do whatever I could to just get ahead or one step up. And sometimes when you look at the long term or your goals, you don't do the best job in the moment. And this year, and even when I got back from Perth, I decided to just be the best at whatever role I had. So last year was the G League coach. So I said, I'm going to come back and be the best G League coach I can be every day. And now I go into work every day and say, I'm going to be the best assistant I can be. And my goal is to be the best assistant in the NBA that day. And I think if I can keep that up, maybe I'll get an opportunity down the road. But if I don't get that, at least I think I'll have a chance to, you know, stick around for a lot longer this time and prove that I can contribute and I'm valuable to a staff. Because there's a lot of guys on staff and there's a lot of guys, even more guys, trying to get on staff. So if you start thinking about what's down the road or what you want to be down the road, you maybe are slipping up and not taking care of the business that you got to take care of each day.
So your son Max's story was so touching for everyone over here, I think, and the way that we have to live with 2-year waiting lists for pediatricians compared to how you were able to help him by going back home really opened a lot of people's eyes over here. It's actually quite crazy what a lot of people are living through over here in those circumstances. It's his birthday in a couple of days. How's he going? Give us an update on how life is for the young fella.
Yeah, I mean, Max is doing pretty good, to be honest. He still, you know, has his struggles every day, and he's going to have struggles his whole life, sadly, but that's part of the deal. He's still nonverbal, so he's not talking, but he knows how to get what he wants. Pretty much everything that he wants, he can get. He's been going to like a special school 5 days a week, where he has like a one-on-one instructor there when he's there, and they all love him. He's a good-natured little guy, and you know, he's very happy to be there and tries hard when he's there to learn. And it's hard to notice the progression sometimes when you're around him every day. But every now and then you'll see something that you're like, oh, I didn't think he could do that, or that's a new, or he's better at that now. So I feel like it's paying off for him. I don't think it's necessarily any better than maybe what's available in Perth, and I'm sure it's getting better there too. But it just feels a little bit more, I guess, safer for us being closer to home and having a little bit of help every now and then for both kids. So Max is actually, yeah, his birthday's in a couple days. We were able to have a little get together for him yesterday. We had an off day, and three or four of the coaches came over with their kids, and he kind of keeps to himself, but he was having a good time, you know, watching everybody and getting in the mix every now and then. And he loves dribbling his basketballs and playing, you know, climbing and playing. So he has a good life right now. Just we're trying to do as much as we can to make sure that we provide him everything that he needs to have the best life possible. And sometimes it feels like it's going pretty slow, but I know that we're doing our best. And as long as he's happy, that's the main thing right now.
Are you getting any information at all about being nonverbal? Will that be a long-term thing for him that they can lock in at the moment, or are they confident that he'll start talking soon?
No one knows, to be honest. No one knows. And the hardest part is probably hearing stories like, oh, don't worry, so-and-so, you know, when they turn 5, they started talking, or when they turn 4, they started talking, it'll come. So he may or he may not, we don't know. So sometimes it's a little tough to deal with, but, you know, we got to control what we can control and help him any way we can. And he's learning other ways to communicate that hopefully he'll pick up and be able to use in a worst-case scenario. And best-case scenario, he figures it out, and when he's ready, he starts talking. But like I said, right now he can get what he wants other ways. You know, grabbing your hand and taking you to where he wants, or pointing up. Those are things that he couldn't do, you know, when we were leaving Perth. So that's a step in the right direction, if nothing else.
You mentioned the Ingles family. Utah's got some fantastic facilities. And a lot of that has to do, I think, with their involvement, being over there and needing some assistance for their kids. So what sort of support have they provided you over there, and how important has it been to have that relationship?
Well, it was big just getting going. The school that Max attends actually is the same school that Joe and Renee's son went to. So that was their recommendation that we went there. Suzanne has met some people that are friends with Renee that are in the autism community, autism moms, so to speak. And they've been great to just kind of recommend things and, you know, hey, Max is having a tough day, Suzanne might reach out, and they've been through the same thing. So it was nice just to have someone in the in the business that can relate. They did a lot of stuff here for the autism community. It just leaves a big hole when they left. I'll never be able to replace that hole or fill that hole, but I'm going to try and start doing some things to raise some money, raise some awareness. Last year, the Stars had an autism awareness game. I think they're doing the same thing this year. The Jazz, I'm not sure if they do that, but I've tried to start a little program for head coaches in the NBA that I'm friends with or know a little bit, where they're going to wear a special decorated sneaker one game in April when it's Autism Awareness Month, and we'll get their media to ask a couple questions about it and prep them. And I think I have 8 or 10 coaches on board for this year, so maybe that will turn into something that we can build on down the road. But at the end of the day, just kind of, I guess, being motivated by what Joe and Renee did. Obviously, we're at a lot lower level in terms of our juice around town and things like that, but we can chip in where we can hopefully contribute a little bit, because we're very grateful for everything that's available to us here.
When we spoke last year about this, you mentioned FACES over in Perth, which was part of receiving money as a beneficiary from Telethon. We had Telethon over the weekend, and more than $77 million was raised. Did you see the figure on Twitter, or did you see any of the other beneficiaries from autism that received some money as a result of that?
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I know when we left, there was you did the story on why we left, and the amount of people that reached out was pretty crazy. Some positive stories, some not so positive. So seeing that amount of money raised is awesome. I know some of the groups were All Stars for Autism and Autism Association of WA, which we've had contact with when we were there. Camp Autism, I believe, is another one. And you mentioned FACES and Ocean Heroes. So it sounds to me like things are going pretty good there. And no matter where you are, there can always be more awareness and more money, and you can never have enough. So I was pretty happy to see that. And, hopefully some of those people that reached out to us when we left and thanked us or shared their story as well can benefit from some of that fundraising too.
How's Suzanne, your wife, and how's your daughter Shailen going? Are they settled in quite nicely in the Salt Lake?
Yeah, they're doing good. Everyone really likes it here. It's a great spot for families. Salt Lake's not known as like the party capital of the world. So, maybe when I was 21, 25, that would have been an issue, but right now it's for the best. Obviously there's a strong Mormon community here, and I think it's safe to say that in general Mormons tend to have bigger families. So there's tons of stuff set up for families. Perth was great too. I remember Suzanne and Max would go to the zoo and the aquarium and the science center and all that stuff. So it's very similar here. We have all those kinds of things that the kids can go to, tons of playgrounds. Lots of them are like special needs accessible, so it's easier for Max to get around. And Shailen, we hope, is going to start kindergarten or school of some sort for her age group at Christmas time, which would be a big boost because it'll clear the house out for at least half a day every day. Give Suzanne a little break, give her some of her own time. But they're doing pretty good as well. And Shay's got a mind of her own. She runs the house. So it'll be good to get her out of the house and get some real world experience for her, to get her back down to earth.
The lifestyle that you mentioned, it is vastly different to anything you've experienced, really, because Prince Edward Island, where you're from, is naturally an island. So you're on the beach. Boston has some nice beaches. I think you were living in North Beach over here, and the nearest beach to Salt Lake City is 1,100 kilometres away. So what does your weekend or off time look like? It's certainly not beaches. So what's the number one pastime you would head towards?
Yeah, so the mountains are nice. I mean, they're nice to look at, and it's cool to live here, but they aren't much good to me. I don't ski or anything else. So other than looking at them in the morning when I drive to work, it's not much good. I miss the ocean. Perth was the nicest place we're ever going to live. We knew that when we were there. We could see, I guess we're in Waterman's Bay, just above North Beach, so we could see the beach from our house, see the sunset, so we were spoiled that whole year. And we talk about that all the time. At least we got the experience of 4 years. Too bad it couldn't have been a little bit longer, because it was really good. So the summers are really hot here. We're just finishing summer now. And it was like basically from May until end of September, it was in the 30s, 40s sometimes, and very similar to Perth's summer. So it's a dry heat, and we just bought a house 2 months ago after we signed with the NBA club. So our number one request for the house was a pool. So we got a house with a pool and a little bit of a yard. So we spent most of our time, spare time out there, whether it be in the pool or just playing around the yard. And Max isn't a big fan of the pool yet. He goes in every now and then. Shay loves it. But Max loves the little playground equipment that we have. So in Perth, we had almost a private playground right next to our house. No one was ever there. So we spent a lot of evenings there, him just climbing around and jumping. So he can do that here. And that's where we spend most of our free time nowadays.
I find the weather part of it crazy. Like, so it's Wednesday morning here in Perth, Tuesday night in Salt Lake City as we're recording this. And it's meant to be a 23 degree day tomorrow for you, but Saturday's forecast is for snow. How the hell do you get by with 23 degrees midweek and then snow on Saturday? Like, I was told when we were there with the Wildcats in 2018 that it changed in an instant. The weather could just go and suddenly winter has arrived. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, I'm ready for it. The house we rented last year had a really long driveway. That was like the biggest mistake we could have made because it snowed. Like I said, it was a record year for snow here. I remember shoveling it maybe 6-7 times and just breaking my back. So our driveway is pretty short here, so it won't be as bad. Obviously, I'm used to winter. I had one good year in Perth where I skipped it. But other than that, we've had it, you know, my whole life. So the winters here aren't that bad. It snows a little bit, but it melts quick and stays around, you know, 0 to 8 degrees in the winter for the most part. The mountains are covered in snow now, so people are itching to get skiing and they all love winter. So, no, I'll trade it. The summers are long. I'll probably go for a swim right after this interview before bed. So, maybe it'll be the last one of the season, but, you know, that's 5-6 months where you can get out and get in the pool or go for walks and things like that. So I'll trade a long summer for a little bit of winter.
And you mentioned you're still following what's going on over here. You've lived the pressure and expectation of being the Wildcats coach. John Rielly's going through it at the moment. They went 15-13 last year and snuck into the play-in tournament on percentage. They're currently 2-4, and the pressure from the fans is like it is any time the Wildcats don't go well. Any thoughts around him or, you know, what it's like to live this pressure of this job?
Yeah, no, I definitely feel for him. I wish we had that play-in tournament the year I was there. Maybe people wouldn't have such a negative opinion of me when I left. But no, it's a tough job. It was a good experience to learn that stuff. You got to put up with some, you know, media scrutiny and fan scrutiny and high expectations. So feel for him, but at the same time, it's part of the deal when you accept that job. Probably the only advice I would give, and I'm not really in a position to give advice on that stuff, but I would just ignore everyone and just stick with what you believe in and listen to your coaches and your players. And I'm sure he's doing all that right now. And I'm definitely rooting for them to get on a little win streak here because, you know, like I said, a lot of good people involved in the organization that were around when I was there that I'm grateful for their friendship and the opportunity that I had. So I'm always cheering for the Wildcats to win. A little tougher when they play Southeast now because of Mike and Trigg, but I'll just cheer for both teams that night.
You wouldn't have needed the play-in tournament with a 16-12 record. You would have finished third last year. It's amazing how little things can impact things. One extra win, yeah, you go from fifth to what it would have been third. It's the only time in history that 16-12 hasn't got a team into the top four. It was a unique year that you were here, that's for sure. The important one to finish. You got right into Aussie sport over here. You were into the Perth Scorchers. You were into the Freo Dockers. Salt Lake City is steeped in Australian history. Where you play your games is where Stephen Bradbury won his gold medal for Australia in 2002. Does he have a statue there yet? We all love Stephen Bradbury in the story. Does he have a statue at the Delta Center?
He doesn't have one there. So where that Olympics was, hockey and skating, I believe, was at the Maverick Center. I could be wrong on that, where the Salt Lake City Stars play. So there was no statues of him, but there was a pretty cool thing for me. The Canadian team won that year. Wayne Gretzky was the GM. Hopefully someone that's listening to this knows who Wayne Gretzky is. But it was arguably the greatest team ever assembled in hockey. And that Olympics, the Salt Lake City committee brought down a Canadian ice-making team to make the ice for the hockey rink. And they secretly put a $1 coin, a loonie, under the center ice. No one knew about it except them. And then slowly it started to leak out to the Canadian side that this loonie was down there, and it was considered like a lucky loonie for them. So after the Canadians won gold medal, they brought the Looney up and put it in the Hall of Fame, the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. So there's a wall, which was their locker room at the time in that building still, that they all signed. And they covered the wall with plexiglass so it's preserved. And I would go down there and just check it out just to kind of get a little taste of home kind of get a little bit of hype for the games before the games last season. But it was a special thing for me to see that as a Canadian. And if you ever get a chance to visit, I'll make sure they put some sort of a monument up for Bradbury as well.
That sounds actually really, really cool to see. And you had, as you said, you've had a role with the Canadian team and bronze medal at the World Cup. You've been really proud of your team going through that, when you've, considering the history you have with both the under-19s and the under-23s.
Yeah, for sure. I've been part of the senior team too. I went to training camp this year, and then when the team went overseas, I went home. But kind of was a outsider scout, you know, part of the staff, which was cool. We've had like three straight Olympics with basically heartbreak down to the last game. 2016, I was on the staff. We lost to France to go to Brazil. So it was special to watch the games and kind of see a lot of that work finally pay off. And just knowing how hard all those people have worked to try and get us to the Olympics. You know, I think I was in our facility by myself. It was like 6 a.m. here when Canada played Spain to qualify for the Olympics and the World Cup, and they won basically in the last minute. And not going to lie, I shed a few tears just watching it. Mainly because I was so happy for everyone to finally make it and knowing what we've been through, and a little bit of sadness that I wasn't there to celebrate with them. But I'll still take it, and you know, I'll be part of the program in some form for a lot of years, hopefully, and get my crack to go to the Olympics at some point. But for now, I'm just happy that they made it, and we're trying to match what the Boomers did last time, which was get to the medal podium. And it's not going to be easy, but we definitely have enough talent to get there. Just a matter of putting it all together for the right time.
Well, the Utah Jazz are at home to the Sacramento Kings on Thursday. Western Standard Time will be 9 a.m. our time, so it's obviously a different day for you, but Thursday for us. Really appreciate you coming on. It's we've had enough contact, I reckon, both during your time in Perth and since you got back over there, to know that I've got massive admiration for you and what you've achieved as both a father, a husband, and a coach, and I'm really thrilled that you are back with your skills being recognised again at the highest level, and you're doing what you love, and it's good to see that the family are going really well also. So thank you very much for your time.
Oh, likewise, man. I appreciate you, Craig. I wish you all the best, your family as well. And sounds like I owe our GM a beer after everything they said about me there. It was nice to talk to you. I'm still a big fan of the NBL. I got to go make sure my super coach team is locked in for this week. Haven't had a chance to get the big prize yet, but I'm inching closer every week, I think.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. Remember, you can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian and thewest.com.au. We'll be back next week for another episode of the Dribble Podcast.